Good morning. Our opening words this morning are offered in support of our Canadian Unitarian friends, the ministers of the First Unitarian Church of Toronto. Sean Newton, Danielle Weber, and Lynn Harrison are in North Dakota this morning at Standing Rock, answering the call to clergy from the First Nations there gathered on the sacred land of the Lakota. They're standing prayerfully and peacefully in the way of a pipeline. They drove for days to heed a call that came from the people and one that came unexpectedly from within. And they gathered with clergy this morning to stand alongside the water protectors for our kin and for our mother. Our prayer comes from Florence Kaplow, a Buddhist nun and UU minister who has also traveled to stand with the water protectors in a cold North Dakota winter. We call out to the four directions and to the power of life that flows through all things to protect the lives of those at Standing Rock, to soften the hearts of the police so that violence is renounced, to awaken in government officials the force of conscience, and to answer the prayers of people everywhere, and particularly the prayers of the traditional protectors of the Missouri River, the Umpapa Lakota of Standing Rock, that the Black Snake Pipeline dies forever on the plains of North Dakota, never to be revived. I would invite forward Mary and Irish to light our chalice this morning. We light it to bring light into the darkness, that our colleagues and compatriots might feel its warmth in that dark cold and see it to guide their way home, that they know that we would be walking with them, singing with them, being with them this morning.
Good morning. How are you folks doing today? Doing well? I'm glad. So I want to tell you one thing you don't know about me is that when I'm not here at church, one of the things that I do is I work with teachers and I work with grown-ups and I work with them around teaching kids how to know more about their bodies and feel safe in their bodies, and all about the different kinds of families there are, and about how they can stay safe. So one of the things that we do here in this congregation is we lead a program called OWL. And OWL is a program that uses a lot of those lessons. So one of the things that we do in OWL is we talk about something called consent. Do folks know what consent means? Patty knows what consent means. Does anybody else know what consent means? I think a lot of our adults probably have a sense of what consent means. Have you heard the word before? Yeah? We got a couple of little head nods up here. That's good. It means that you get to make decisions for yourself, really. It means that based on what you want, you get to decide what happens to you. And this is particularly true when we're talking about our bodies and what we want to have happen to our bodies and what we want to do with our bodies. So I used to have a neighbor, and this neighbor was named Seema. And it might surprise you to know this, but when I was a kid, I was kind of cute. And Seema was a little bit older than me. She was a little bit bigger than me. And she just loved to run up to me and hug me. And she'd pick me up and swing me around and hug me some more and tell me she loved me like crazy. Now, sometimes I was pretty happy to be picked up. Sometimes I thought, that seems pretty fun. But there were times that I didn't want to hug. And as I got older, sometimes I didn't even want a hug from an aunt or an uncle or a grandparent. And it wasn't because I didn't love them, just sometimes that wasn't what I wanted. But I didn't know what to do when I didn't want that hug, when I didn't want what people expected of me. So this month at church, we're talking about expectations a lot. We're with the adults, we're going to be talking about today how we can't sometimes just do what's expected. How sometimes expecting things to be a certain way can be a problem. So in OWL, we learn about how it's important to know that our bodies are ours, and we get to decide each time we see someone how they get to touch us and how we want to touch them. So in OWL classes, we teach everyone different fun ways of greeting people. With the holidays coming up soon and the potential to visit with lots of folks, I thought this would be a good time to practice the different ways that we can greet people. Faye has offered to give me a hand in demonstrating, and then we're all going to do it together. So I used to know four different ways of greeting somebody. So I would sometimes do hi. And sometimes I would offer a high five. Sometimes we would have a handshake. And sometimes we would hug. That, I thought those were the four ways, but then some youth taught me a new way. The new way is this. They call that the flaming chalice fist bump. So when we gather with people and when we meet people, we want to be sure about the way that we want to greet them, because we want to be happy and healthy in our own bodies, and we want to be clear with other people. So if I were to come up to Faye, and I'm seeing Faye, and I say, Faye, would you like a hug?
Not today.
Great. Could I maybe offer you a high five? Great. So, you've all seen how it's done. Do we need to demonstrate them again? We'll do it quickly. Hi. High five. Handshake. Hug. Flaming chalice fist bump. I would invite you to rise as you are willing and able and greet people in a manner in which you want to be greeted.
We have to agree. High five. Patty, can I have your hug? Oh, thank you. Thank you. Hug? I'm more high five. Or flaming chalice fist bump? Yeah. Nice. Susan, can we do a flaming chalice fist bump?
Okay, great. I like
Boom.
It.
Boom.
Oh.
Laura. I would love a hug. Thank you, Lorna.
For those sorrows still held deep within, that cannot yet come to the surface. For those joys, we are not yet able to share. We light another candle. And we light light in our hearts. Our meditation this morning. Now, please join me in a time of reflection, of meditation, and prayer. We will offer some words and then ring the bell. We'll take a full minute of silence, and then the choir will welcome us back. I invite you to breathe in and breathe out. And again, breathe in and breathe out. The season of anticipation and expectation is upon us. What are you feeling? Feel yourself in your body. Locate the places that ache and the places that ache no longer. What are you feeling? As the nights grow still longer and the days recede further, what are you feeling? As life brings the unexpected, in job loss, in sickness, in worry over your children or your parents or the whole of the earth, or in the death of a loved one, what are you feeling? Whether your family is gathering or you're aware deeply of their absence, what are you feeling? Hanukkah, Christmas, Diwali, Kwanzaa all draw near with their tales of unexpected miracles. What are you feeling? In this time, in this place, in this room, in that chair upon which you sit, What are you feeling? In your mind, in your heart, what are you feeling?
Have you ever been laid off from a job or a career that you loved? This happened to me this past spring. I worked in sales all my life. Most recently, a career working for suppliers to the grocery industry. I worked for a national distributor for 29 years. I started out as a junior sales rep and, over time, worked up to a management position. I held that position for more than 15 years. I came to have very strong bonds with all my colleagues and customers. I attended courses and workshops to improve my skills, both in computers and in leadership. My expectation was that I would eventually retire from this company. Then came Friday, May 13th. I went to the Surrey office to prepare for a trade show that was happening that weekend. Shortly after I arrived, my supervisor asked me to join him in the boardroom. There, waiting for me, was the vice president of the company and the human resources manager. You can imagine my surprise and sadness. Those expectations I had of retiring from the job evaporated in that moment. After this meeting, I traveled back to the ferry terminal to return home in tears. Why me? What brought this about? Through the weekend, my wife and closest friends supported me, cried with me, and were just there for me. I thought, what do I do now? I spent all those years for this company taking courses and growing my experience. All these skills now go to waste? When Sharon went back to work on Monday, I was sitting by myself and thinking, I need to let this go. They have let me go. I can't change that. I just can't do anything about it. I showed my severance package to a lawyer and a financial advisor, and both agreed that I would be fine. The package was good. I then decided to pick myself up, let it go, and move on. I began volunteering more and came to realize that I wasn't ready for retirement. I'm 59 years young. I went to a career agency who helped me to create an effective resume and cover letter, and they began looking for a new adventure. Because of the severance, we were able to put some debt behind us, and financial instability would not be a concern. 7 weeks later, I was working again. I've now been working in a new sales career in a completely different industry for almost 6 months, and I'm loving it. The entire process has showed me that I didn't need to be sad about losing my job, but excited for a new opportunity. During this time, I have received a great deal of support from many members of this congregation. You helped me to see the opportunity that was ahead of me. For this, I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you.
I'm not sure what you're expecting today. I'm a little unsure what it is that I'm expecting today. In a month when we're talking about expectations, it's funny to have both so many and so few when we walk in these doors. I imagine you weren't expecting that you would be flaming chalice fist-bumping folks when this day started. I hope that in this time we share together that we can find ways to let a few expectations go, to make space for what might blossom in their place. When I was in my first year of seminary 6 years ago now, I had a class on pastoral care that visited Toronto General Hospital. We took a tour. We heard a little bit about their spiritual care program and their team. Then some of the staff told us about their experiences as chaplains in the hospital. After they told stories, some of which were joyous, some of which were heartbreaking, the head chaplain, a fellow named Mark Doucette, stood up. He said, "The most important thing that you can remember is that for the folks in trauma, whether that's patients or their family members or their loved ones, so much of their pain comes because they didn't expect this, or that they expected something else. The people that you will meet in hospitals or hospices and sometimes in congregations are struggling because they expected that life would follow a particular path, a unique path, their path, but a path nonetheless. For most of the folks here in this hospital, that path would go from here to here, with all the rest stops along the way, maybe an occasional diversion, but the path through the commons is worn by the many who have trod it before. But for people here in our care, the path from here to here has been cut here. And this life needs to be grieved before a new branch can grow. I often think that Buddhists are better prepared for this than most of us are. Understanding how Shenpa sits at the root of our suffering, we often translate it as attachment, but it could as easily be seen as being hooked on an outcome, an expectation that we have. We get hooked by the promise that things will be as we expect, and the more our expectations are affirmed, the more they grow solid and unyielding. One of the clearest examples I've had of what Mark the chaplain was talking about came not in a hospital or hospice, but around a meal table at a winter retreat last year. I sat with a woman who was struggling after her son had told her a few weeks prior that he was indeed going to transition from female to male. This mother was distraught. She kept referring to her daughter, though her son had made clear that he preferred male pronouns. She asked, "What if it's just a phase? What if she gets hurt? Is it something that I did?" After talking for a while, we started to get to that more personal space, where her grief was heaviest and most personal. She finally really broke down when she talked about not getting to share the experience of childbirth, of picking out a wedding dress, of sharing that mothering bond that she expected to have. On her son's life and on her own, the mother had written her expectations, and she needed space to name them, to grieve them, space before she could imagine. She had an understanding of his life that went from here to here, and she had an understanding of her own life that followed that same path. The unexpected so often invites grief, and always more grief when it's something we haven't questioned before. Expectations can become like the bones in our body, unseen and unconsidered beneath the surface. With each time they are reinforced, they calcify and ossify, and the skeleton grows more rigid, more susceptible to breaking. We want our expectations to be more like muscles, bound to a frame but growing and stretching all the time, open to that child who doesn't want a hug this time, or that child whose identity is changing for all time. I know that I struggle personally with expectations. I struggle with taking comfort in things being the way that I expect them to be. Sometimes I do everything I can to keep things as expected, comfortable. Performing as expected, being as expected, keeps things clear and easy. Having a script is simply more comforting than inviting the unexpected or unknown. I have a dear friend who earlier this year told me that she was splitting up with her husband. She was sitting across from me on the couch when she said this, and I responded, "I'm very sorry to hear that." That's when I added my expectation, "You must be so sad. You must be so sad." I knew as soon as it left my mouth, it was the wrong thing to say. I've seen relationships end enough times to know that sadness isn't always the dominant emotion. Sometimes it's relief, sometimes it's joy, sometimes it's a little bit of everything all at once. I worked in relationship counseling and with victims of domestic violence where that statement that one was leaving was often a proclamation of self-worth. And I certainly don't think that longevity is the only measure of a relationship's success. I am very much indebted to that friend who didn't just shut down, which is what I would expect, but I'd probably do myself. She did the unexpected in confronting my expectations. She invited me back into that moment with her in the fullness of grace. Acknowledging that I was working from a script and an expectation in which all breakups make people sad, instead I got to ask how she felt about it and how she was doing. She named how, in fact, it was a liberating thing for her, a rekindling of life, a bright spark of light after years of feeling deeply unsupported. It was an unexpected conversation and all the more profound and relationship building for it. This weekend past, Reverend Shauna did a workshop on effective listening for the Care and Concern team, as well as anyone else who wanted to participate. 22 people came. The room was buzzing a little when I walked in. There was lots of richness in those conversations, the conversations that people had that day. One of the exercises we did involved sitting with someone and asking them the same question 6 times. You might wonder why someone would ask the same question 6 times, especially if you answered them the first time. But with each time we ask, the respondent is invited to go just a little bit deeper. The first time that I did this exercise was in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We were gathered as a community of seminarians with Reverend Kendall Gibbons, whose new book on humanist voices in Unitarian Universalism is at the top of my Christmas list. Expectations. Hi, Mom. Reverend Gibbons framed her workshop that weekend around the 10 attributes of spiritual maturity, what we are all trying to develop when we gather as congregations and churches. The question we were asked to do with our partners, though, was, who are you? I was partnered with a new friend named Leslie. We sat facing one another. She took my hands in hers and asked me, who are you? I answered, I'm a man. Thank you, she said. She paused. She smiled. Who are you? I am a reader. Who are you? I am a bookbinder. Who are you? I am a student. Who are you? I am a professor. Who are you? I am a son. I am a partner. I am a writer, a brother, a hiker. On and on we went, my best guess being that she probably asked, waited for an answer, and thanked me more than 50 times. That's when I started to run out of easy answers. I am a disappointment. Where'd that come from? I'm a coward. An arrow pierced my heart. With each subsequent question, I found myself going to unexpected hard places, to vulnerable places. My easy answers exhausted, the harder ones now bubbled up. I could feel myself tensing, my heart beating faster. I am an inspiration. And I knew that to be just as true, but no less hard to say. I am beloved. That was the last one. Thank you, she said. It was a transformative experience there to sit with someone knowing they had no expectations about what I would say. Their presence, their thanks would not waver no matter what emerged. So often in conversation, we are following a script of expectations. You speak, then I speak. I tell a story. You tell me how it reminds you of a story in your own life. Whether or not that's actually clear how they're related. Back and forth we go until the bell rings and time is up. That was a mistake that I made in that conversation with my friend, when I expected that she would or should feel a particular way. And I've made that mistake 1,000 times before. I've probably made it many times since. I've walked into rooms thinking I knew what to expect. I've said things expecting a particular reaction. I've had conversations where I imagined the source of the distress and tried to answer it rather than checking my expectations out. I'm learning slowly to be a little more comfortable with the unexpected, to invite it in. But those expectations feel like they're in my bones sometimes. I want to work that muscle, the one that lets me greet the unexpected. I wonder if you too could use a workout. When we invite people to go deeper, when we offer open questions and a silence into which they can speak, when we honor and appreciate what they've brought forth, when we touch one another in ways that are so uncommon now, we bring the unexpected forth. We invite transformation. We open ourselves to relationality. And we sometimes feel the Spirit's presence. Namaste. The divine in me greets the divine in you. The hazards of expectation are everywhere when we gather together and try to be in relationship. This congregation is here to help us go deeper, to be hearing one thing, and rather than filling in the next 10 lines ourselves, instead practicing the art of curiosity and asking again, or asking for more. This church was not made for easy answers or for keeping with expectations. The Unitarian Universalist Association in the early 2000s, when we Canadian congregations were still apart, launched an advertising and marketing campaign that referred to us as the uncommon denomination. Though the campaign didn't have much impact in the wider world, the notion still sits with me because it's all about expectations. When we declare ourselves as uncommon, we invite people to consider the common that they imagine, what they expect when they think about a community of faith. In the 1950s and 60s, when our movement had its greatest growth, we were a church that welcomed women into leadership, that honored and celebrated interracial marriage, where no test of creed was applied and science and reason had a place, where we were here not to build a skeleton, but to exercise our muscles together. In that day, we were uncommon. Walking through the doors, you got an unexpected message, and folks who had felt betrayed or maligned in other churches found an unexpected welcome. Stories of unexpected welcome are legion amongst those who found our churches and have stayed for a good long while. I imagine some of you had an unexpected welcome. But what was uncommon then can seem to us so commonplace now. The things we stood proudly for, those unexpected things, those uncommon values, many of them became mainstream values. Interracial marriage, women in leadership, the transitions that formed our explosive growth in that time as fellowships have become values held by overwhelming majorities of young people. They became mainstream values. Do we still want or need to be uncommon? Do we still want to be the place that offers something unexpected? What would that be? Those things that were uncommon 60 years ago are common now. What would we do now? What unexpected thing would we do that we want to be common 60 years from now? Over the last year, 2/3 of our congregations have sponsored 220 refugees from Syria, Iran, Afghanistan, Iraq, Eritrea, Burundi, Ethiopia, Gambia, and Somalia. Here in this congregation, we raised money and moved small mountains to make it happen. That was unexpected. The Lakota at Standing Rock issued a call for clergy to come, just like 50 years ago in Selma, Alabama. They expected 50, hoped for 100, more than 500 came, and 1 in 10 were Unitarians. That was unexpected. We are forging new bonds with Indigenous peoples, extending ourselves into connection with other faith traditions, learning to speak a language that draws the circle wider, to welcome more in, and learning to listen to one another without expectation. 22 of us gathered on a Saturday afternoon to learn to listen better. Our denomination and this religious community are doing unexpected things. How shall we join them as individuals? Do we want to greet newcomers who may offer us something unexpected? Our mantra sometimes tells us that we do not need to think alike, to love alike. How shall we practice that? We stand with arms open or a hand extended, seeking to welcome, and in that posture, we must be open to the response that comes, even when, maybe especially when, it isn't what we expected. We must ask questions again and again, inviting the depths to which we can go when we trust the hand that holds us. My greatest pride in our churches and our movement has been when we've done the unexpected, when we've been uncommon. It may be that it comes from my feeling a little uncommon myself. I imagine some of you have had experiences being a little uncommon. I've heard many of those stories from you. My greatest pride in my congregation has come when I have seen someone find an abundant welcome, when they expected less or feared much worse. And I have enormous pride in having heard from the woman that I talked to last year and the new plans that she is making with her son, whom she honors and celebrates and finds a new and exciting bond on a new path that they have found. Let us listen without expectation, open to what comes. There may well be a miracle within.